how are you going to develop a conceptual framework? Introduction to research. Okay? How do you do this? If you don't have a conceptual model, you don't know what you're going to do. You have an idea, okay, I will do this. How you're going to do that, you don't know. That's the bigger part of the research issue. So you need to have a conceptual model, means some idea in your mind, how is this going to be put together? And what are the links? And I'm going to show you now how this works. Okay? Alright. So what's so important about conceptual framework? It articulates the pathway by which an intervention is expected to cause the desired outcome. That's the cause and effect. Right? It shows you what needs to be done to do this. You need to do this to do this. Without that, you're going all over the place. Second, provides the evaluator with specific elements of the assessments. What that means is when we look at your, when you do a research project, the very first thing we look at as assessors is the conceptual model. Because that tells us right away, are you in the right direction or not? And if you are in the wrong direction, there is really no point looking at anything else. Right? So that's what that means. It provides the assessors, evaluators, to assess what you're doing. There are other names that what you call there in research communities. There can be conceptual framework, other things are logic models, program models, and so on, so you have some idea what this means, and that's the only reason for that. Like for us, for business management, MBA programs, we call it a conceptual framework. Okay, here's an example. This is for family planning, demand and program impact on fertility. If you were doing a research project, for example, this is a very complex issue, that's why this is here. Okay? And then later on I'm going to give you a very simple one, so it will be a lot easier for you. But one of the students I worked with in the States did this, by the way, and this was the reason for this, is when you take a look at family planning, demand and program impact on fertility. Now, what are the things that link this, and what are the things that are required in order for this to happen? Obviously, there are societal and individual factors involved. The society is involved with it. If you look at the family planning program that China implemented for one-child policy, for example, look what happened with the society there. Now, all of a sudden, the Chinese population is growing older and older, and there are less younger people to take on this load. Right? More people retiring, and if you don't have the same percentage of people working, you've got a discussion. Now you've got problems. Right? This is what China is going to be faced with, these major issues. So there is only one example of many we talk about. Okay. Second, so you take a look at that issue. Then you come up to value demand for children. Right? Singapore, for example. Singapore government is trying and trying and trying to push the Singaporeans to have more children, and they won't. Right? They are offering all kinds of stuff. 1 year, better, 100% paid maternity leave. Even that didn't work. Then gave it extra incentive. Fathers get to leave early. That also didn't work. Right? All kinds of packages they are coming up with. 100% medical coverage for pregnancies. Even that didn't work. Right? They are struggling to get these guys to have babies, and they won't. Right? So, because they are so, the demand for children is less there because so they are so directed in what they have to do, and they don't have time to bring children, kids up. Right? Then, FP means here family planning. Demand for spacing and limiting. That's the next stage. Next stage after that, these other intermediate variables that will happen by doing these. Then the next step is the fertility. Right? Wanted or unwanted children is the next thing. Right? Then you come down here. Other health and social improvements that need to be applied. Right? Down here, you come up here with development programs that needs to be done. right? Then from here, it goes back up here to these areas, okay? It also goes from here to here, service outputs, assessing what the requirements are, the policy programs that need to be applied for people, right? Their image, that's another big issue in society, acceptability of families and so on, right? Service utilization, that means what kind of government programs and service utilizations do they apply. United States, for example, gives you huge tax benefits, which are, if you were a single person, you would have a certain tax bracket. If you were doing a joint, which is called a joint tax program, then you get a certain amount of the deductions that I allow. If you have children, you have additional deductions you can get off the taxes. Now, unlike Sri Lanka, the bigger taxes we have there is income tax. That means every person has to pay tax out of your salary, whether you like it or not, and depending on the bracket that you're in, it's the percentage. But people who are family people, even up to two or more children, can actually pay probably 50% less tax than a person who doesn't have children. So that's a typical system that you would put in the government service utilization program and other health and social improvements. Then in here, with this link over here, you also have contraceptive practices. Now you have, when you are doing your research on this idea, all these things you are going to test. When we look at this, we know, has the student covered all the variables that are required in order for this to happen? That's the assessment of the people. That's what I meant. When we look at it, if that's not there, everything else is negative. Right? Okay. We get, this is more complicated, but not very easy one will be coming up. So what's the definition of a conceptual model? I took this from one of the leading authors who are these two guys who wrote this stuff. One's a woman, by the way, psychologist who wrote this. The type of diagram which shows the set of relationships between factors that are believed to impact or lead to a target condition. A diagram that defines the theoretical entities, objects, or conditions of the system and the relationship between them. That's what a conceptual model means. So you can have that and read through that over and over again, and you're going to understand what the definition of a conceptual model is. Concepts are usually in boxes. The process is shown between arrows. Right? Often drawn on is one, is typical theory. Empirical evidence, basically empirical means evidence relating to or based on experience or observations. Most of you guys are going to be doing empirical research, right? So you're going to be using your own experience and your own evidence of what you're doing because you know your company and what you're doing better than anybody else. So obviously that would be an empirical study. Knowledge of specific to a particular case is what it helps you do. It serves to summarize and integrate knowledge, provides explanations for cause links, for the causal links, sorry, why they are linked together is what that means, and to generate the hypothesis. See how the hypothesis is coming back from what we talked about earlier. That's why I told you if you don't have the hypothesis and you're going to go back to that, that's a good thing, because you're going to refine it depending on what you do. Okay. So how do you build? You start with the endpoint, not the beginning. Right? Dependent variable. Okay, so dependent variable outcome or target point for intervention. Identify potential. Correlates, that's the ones that there's a correlation between one and another, based on empirical and theoretical evidence. What are the things that relates to one another is what it means. So antecedent basically means one that predicts another is what antecedent means, or mediate. variables by proximity to dependent variables. Okay? So one point is, what are the, you start with endpoint, what's the dependent variable or the target point for intervention. After that you look at the linkages between one another and then one, which one proceeds the other, what is the next logical step from the first step to the second step. As you keep putting these boxes on, you're going to all of a sudden find out, oh, wait a minute here, there should be another box in here. That's good because you're refining it. That's a good thing. Right? Got it? Okay. So how do you draw? What are the things that you need to pull together to do a conceptual model? Right? Only include the concepts that will be operationally defined and measured. Don't go to put stuff that you cannot define. Right? Present left to right, top to bottom. That's easy. Use arrows to imply the casualties. That's in this as well. Label the concepts. Those are the boxes that you have. Each one I had a label for it. Do not include operational definitions or values of variables. Don't use those two. Right? Okay. How to think through a conceptual framework. One. Tobacco prevention and control. Let's just take a look at that, for example. And we are going to take a look at tobacco. And how do you prevent and control tobacco use? Interventions reduce exposure to environmental tobacco smoke. ETS. Right? Okay. Tobacco use is the single largest cause of the preventable premature mortality in the United States. So tobacco prevention and control. Interventions to reduce exposure to environmental tobacco smoke. Tobacco use is the single largest cause of the preventable premature mortality in the United States. It is also represents an enormous cost burden to the nation. No question. Especially these guys who are retiring. They got more problems and lung problems and all these things, and taxpayers are putting the bill for this. Because don't forget, when people get older, and what we call Medicare, over 65, it's 100% free. Because most medical facilities, almost all of them in the United States, is private. So if you don't have insurance, you're stuck. They don't even take you to the hospital. So the government has what is called a Medicare program, where you get 100% medical for the rest of your life, everything paid. No deductible. All these people who are smoking end up with all these lung problems and heart problems and every other problem you can think of, and the people are paying for it. Right? So, this is what that means. So, the question is, what works to make tobacco use prevention and control at a population or community level? If you don't have a proper cease smoking program, it's not going to work unless you have it at a community level. Right? Okay. A guide to the community preventative services addresses the effectiveness of community-based interventions for three strategies to promote tobacco use from prevention and control. One, you prevent it. Two, increase cessation, which is of course means temporary or a complete stop. Reduce exposure to environmental tobacco smoke. So you look at the reduction of exposure to it. Finding, strengthen and complement existing guidelines on tobacco prevention control. You look at the current stuff they have and look at the things that are working to some degree and the things that are not. So you have to look at that. For every intervention that we evaluate in the community guide, we develop an analytic framework in which we postulate, that means a true statement, how we think the intervention works and what outcomes we think are important to capturing information. Right? That's pretty self-explanatory, right? Okay. In many cases of analytic framework change, over the course of our reviews, and we learn more about the intervention and the potential outcomes and the body of the evidence in the literature. Now, when you look at all this stuff, it looks pretty heavy duty stuff when you get what? If you want to be totally honest, you're looking at this and saying, okay, tobacco prevention now is okay, the community stuff, what the heck it is. Right? Looks pretty big, isn't it? Okay, take a look at this stuff. We start with smoking bans. What happens if we ban smoking? Right? But the advantage here is, remember, we are starting from the endpoint. We use morbidity as mortality. Morbidity is people who get sick in between, and then we are looking at reducing that, and of course, the mortality is the amount of people dying of tobacco smoke, right? Okay. So, smoking bans might result from community education efforts. So here is one area that you say, if you have community efforts, there could be possibilities of banning smoke. So it's important to recognize that smoking bans might be the result or outcome of interventions such as community-wide education and political campaigns. Politicians love this because smoking is not good for your health. They want to come off as good guys, and there's a big increase in taxes on smoke. And alcohol. Nobody comes forward and says, hey, what the heck are you doing? Release alcohol. I want more alcohol. Nobody says that because at the community level, you don't like to be known as an alcoholic. Amen. Most people who smoke today at a community level is considered a bad thing. They'll not go and say, why are you increasing my cigarettes? They don't. So that's typical. You know, politicians love this, right? Okay, so that's an effective way. Then you recognize that. Second, the experience from the state of California with broad smoking ban has been described quite well in literature. It's written all over, giving you a blow-by-blow account of how the state managed to adopt, implement, extend the state-wide clean indoor air laws. What happened was in the state of California, they decided any interior building smoking is banned. State of California, you smoke inside a building, you're going to get arrested. Right? In addition to that, they banned exterior smoking, that means outside the building, all government buildings. So if you come to any government building, you can't smoke. Outside, even in the park. Right? Not even in the parking lot. You can smoke in the parking lot inside your car. But you can't have the window open. Right? You want to smoke, you bring that stuff on your own, don't put it on other people. Right? Yeah, they actually did that. Because by law, they control that land. It's a government building. Right? Now, you can smoke in your house, you can smoke in the yard of your house, that's yours. The government can't tell you what to do. Because you're probably protected by the Second Amendment, right? Even a policeman can't come inside your house. Right, by law, that's the way it is there. So the government can't tell you what to do inside your home, but they can tell you what to do outside. And it got extremely effective. All restaurants, smoking was banned by law. Then they banned all the bars. They said, you want to come and drink? You can't smoke. You want to drink and smoke? You do it at home. So all of a sudden, people can't say, I need to have my smoke and drink. They didn't like to say that because everybody would look at you and say, what the heck, man, you were drunk or what? You can't live your life without going inside a bar. What the heck is wrong with you? Now people didn't want to portray that image. It got extremely effective. Smoking percentage has dropped drastically in the state of California. Right? So it worked. So that's what they're talking about. Now you have evidence of this. And this is widely written, right? Now, what this means is, if you are doing a research project on any other subject, this is what you do. You take a look at the next thing, And then you look at anybody else who has done this. Okay, not necessarily in Sri Lanka. There are places all over the world. Now you go on the internet and do a search, right, on the subject that you're doing, and then take a look at other companies who have done something similar to this. That's what tells you what to do. You follow? Okay. Now, it is also important to know that in many states, preemption legislation has precludes local governments from strengthening clean indoor air laws. These efforts have been described as industry-sponsored efforts to obstruct efforts of extended protection from the EPS to workers. What this basically means is many private companies in the United States, they put a campaign, the government put a campaign, right? And companies don't like to be known as bad guys, especially the big companies. They like to be, really good guys. So, Google started it, Microsoft started it, Apple Computer started it, right? No smoking in Apple. No smoking in Microsoft. No smoking in Google. Then HP started it. Then it started going all over the place. General Electric started it. This corporation, their General Motors. Right? All of a sudden, other companies followed. Right? Compared to those multi-billion dollar organizations, even the company that I was working for, we also started no smoking. Right? Not even inside. Then earlier there, some of the smoking employees said, can we have a smoke room? You build a smoking room with a exhaust fan and all that. And I thought, what the heck, trying to give these guys a smoke room, and said, a small one. So about 50 guys would go in there, and they, this place is full of smoke, and they come out and they're smelling of smoke. The clothes and all are smelling of smoke. Right. So then I thought, now there's one way to stop this without hurting them, you know, especially for guys. So got hold of some of the nice looking women there and said, can you guys do me a favor? Just understand, you're only helping these people out. Go off to these guys and just flirt with them a little bit, and they say, oh gosh, you smell it. All of a sudden they stop. Major effect there. You understand? See, he understands. That's what I regret. So there are different ways that affects people without hurting their feelings. Because why? We were very concerned about equality and treating everybody the same way. Men, women were treated the same way, right? Different ethnic groups were treated the same way. It didn't matter who it was. So we were very concerned about saying, no, you can't smoke. So instead of doing that, we went the other way. But the end point was the same. Anyway, make a long story short here. 8 months later, we got triggered the smoking room. But they themselves came and said, yeah, you might as well take it out. And then 4 or 5 months after that, we met smoking also in the grounds. And if you can picture this now, typically in the United States, everybody drives. Every employee drives, whether you know, it's normal there. So, what that means is, if you have 1,000 or 2,000 employees in your company, there's 1,000 or 2,000 parking spots. That's how big the yard is. It's massive. It's usually 5 times the size of your building. Just the parking alone. Right? So the yard is pretty big for people to go and smoke. So when we banned that, can you imagine? It's a huge area. But it worked. And what ended up happening? None of the people that were smoking gave up smoking because they all of a sudden realized, hey, I can go for 8 hours without a smoke. If you go to most airports now, smoking is banned. Some airports have a little room. You know, Ratnagiri Airport has a big little room with a smoking room. You can go in there and smoke and again, you know, isn't it? You don't want it. No. Yeah, it's bad, man. There was a guy who went to Dubai with me this last trip. And the guy came back and, you know, stinky little room and there were 50 people smoking there. And this guy comes with his shirt and pants and everything, smelling of smoke. Because you're in there. He doesn't realize it because he's inhaling that stuff himself. So ඒකේ බෑ අද මේ කර්ණ කළා බබා අනිත් සිත් එක ගිහලා ඉන්න බලන්න ඒක. නැහැ නුඟාගෙන මේ යන්නේ ඉඳලා ඉස්සකේ. ඉස්සකේ තන මලගෙන නැහැ. දැන් කොහොමද සුද්ධ කරන්නේ සාදුසයි. But the idea was just to give him a little reminder. You know, look what you're doing to your body.
So was there any reaction from the speaker producers?
Yes.
What
is that? Now, that it wasn't good because they were trying to fight it. Cigarette producers were coming up to legislation to see if they could, first of all, they had to stop the law. Right?
Yes.
So the way you do that is through legislation. So they were bringing legislation acts through lawyers to say, you know, this is wrong. We need to have the freedom. They were using the freedom program. Because that's really big in the United States, personal freedom. It's like the fighting they're having about the guns. You know, people in the Constitution says you have a right to bear arms. This is coming from 1776. People don't like government telling them what to do. That's a fact. Here. So they say, hey, you're trying to take away my freedom. Man, the hell with you. The attitude is you don't even own a gun. Now, even I voted against it when there was a proclamation sent to it for citizens to vote. Right? I never used a gun, I never had one, I basically said, no, you're not banned. Right? Won't try to tell us what to do. Why? Because when government starts telling citizens what to do, what is guns, the next day is home, next day it's something else, another day something else, and before you know it, you're bound to have to stop, they tell you what to do. Right? So that's the idea. So tobacco companies, going back to your question, they tried that angle. And the government won by basically saying we are doing it for the health of the people, right? And you are lying. If you can prove that smoking is good for your health, we're fine. We will take it out. Yeah, they got stuck. But they were told, you prove it. You prove that it's either good for your health or it doesn't cause any harm. You can take something that is not causing any harm to your body anyway, right? And they couldn't.
So I'm thinking like, okay, whatever research you're doing, you can also contact.
Yeah.
Yes. So most of these things, you know, will fight or die because of the common deal. I mean, legislations and all these pockets of the speech, they're also contact.
Yes.
So that kind of approach, even though it's person's faith, might not
yes, be exactly. Good point. Now, if you were doing this in Sri Lanka, you can apply a different argument.
Yeah.
Right?
So, can't
yeah. Sri Lankan government, for example, is using cigarettes to get more money. Because they don't have enough money in the government. Don't forget, 82% of the price of the pack of cigarettes is taxes. I didn't know this. I had a BA student last year who was a director of manager at the Sri Lanka Tobacco Company. Well, he told me, I didn't know. He said, they're not going to change anything. They get 82% of the money in taxes. What do you think? And he said, by the way, another thing that shocked me was the cigarette prices. And I came to Sri Lanka 4 or 5 years ago. A pack of cigarettes was 125 rupees. I still remember this, Benson and Hedges or something like that. Today, that same thing is 550 rupees. In 5 years, went fivefold. And do you know, he was telling me, the percentage of smoking has not reduced. So look at the money. If the idea that the government of Sri Lanka was using was we are going to increase the price to stop smoking. That means they're going to help you people. If that's what they were really trying to do, it didn't happen. And they are still continuing to go. So that's a very good point. If you can use in a local context, you could actually apply that point and then one of your boxes would be there and then when you're analyzing it, that doesn't work. For this reason, see, and then you fix that.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So the second thing that we have now is, we have community education, we put that in there, which we talked about with the programs and the legislation, all that. We have the smoking bans and this that we had in the first part, right? Okay, now back to how smoking bans work. They work in one or three ways. First, directly by reducing exposure, right, in a restricted environment. This alone will have health effects. We know that banning this has effects. So, reduce exposure to this. We put that in there, right? Okay, second, smoking bans might work by affecting the tobacco use behaviors of smokers. So, we know that this has happened. If you take a look at the bans and then affecting the tobacco use behaviors, that means your human beings are driven by their behavior patterns, right? Those of you who did culture know that, that we basically function within our belief structures, right? That's why within cultures you have, if you take a look at the, any country, to simplify it, if you take Sri Lanka, right? You have the Sinhalese culture, the Tamil culture, the Muslim culture, the Berber culture, and a few others, right? Tamil culture, they like the Tamil music, right? So that's what you are born with. Sri Lankan Sinhalese culture, they like that. People in Sinhalese families who have behaviors of adaptation and so on to English music and so on and so forth, they like that part. What does that mean? That is what we, that's our belief structure and then what we are used to. Right? So, what this is saying is that when you take a look at smoking bans might work in affecting tobacco use behaviors of smokers, means what I told you before, if a person all of a sudden who smokes the pack a day, you're 8 hours, 9 hours in the company and you haven't had one cigarette, it is going to help your behavior pattern because all of a sudden you have reduced the amount of consumption of smoke. Whether you like it or not, you can't smoke anyway. When you go in an airplane today, those days you guys were too small for this. Then I used to fly quite a bit from country to country in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And do you know that smoking was allowed in the plane? Yeah, you guys were not even born, so you don't know. There was a smoking section in the plane, usually the back end. All that was banned. Now, I used to take a flight from Minneapolis to Narita, 14-hour flight. How would you like to be in that plane with all these people smoking and you're sitting there reading that stuff? That's the way it was, man. Now, smoking is banned on a single plane, you're allowed to smoke. Right? Now, what happens to these guys who are smoking? They're in a 14-hour flight without smoking. So it does help the behavior patterns make you understand, I can go 14 hours without a cigarette, but hey, this is how we be. Right? That does help. That's the point here. Okay. In response to smoking ban, they might think twice about continuing their habit. They might reduce their daily consumption of tobacco, and these two effects might increase the number who attempt to quit. We know that. So smoking bans also reduce cues to smokers to relapse. Most smokers attempting to quit will be successful. This will result in fewer tobacco uses and reduction of adverse health outcomes. We know that when people get to old age, especially the ones who have been smoking, their lungs have been affected so much, they have major respiratory issues. We know that. Right? And so that does help people to quit and they understand it. Now, we did this part. Now we are going to smoking banning. We talked about changing attitudes, reduce consumption, we talked about increasing quitting attempts, increase the cessation, that means to reduce it, and to stop completely, right? Fewer tobacco users, and then back to this. So you see, little by little, with each part we are talking about, we are just adding a box, right? Okay. Finally, we acknowledge that smoking bans might directly affect tobacco consumption, by youth, or should be effective, sorry about that, their expressions for social desirability or small. Young people, usually those days, don't forget, Hollywood especially was very noted for this. All these movie stars, all that was in all this country. If you looked at these massive posters in California and all that, was this guy in the cowboy hat, you know, on the horse, Marlboro guy. You know, so the young people are looking at that, wow, this is pretty cool, right? But all of a sudden, what happened? None of those are there. It's not cool anymore to smoke. There was a fantastic guest talking about these women, right? This is the reason I did that, because they had a, and before that, they came up with the advertising company that to target these young people in high school in the United States, 16, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, were smoking. And the ad was about, the television ad, was these cute girls walking like this and these guys and all the cool guys. Yeah. And they're talking so that they can hear all the time. First they said, what a cute guy. And then, oh, God, these guys. And they were like this. And then they go to a guy who's not so cute. Like, oh, he's a non-smoker. Right? They were showing this, and all of a sudden, it started having an effect. And little by little, these young guys, it wasn't cool for them to smoke anymore. Because they started going around more and more and more, because this ad got very popular. Right? Your parents love this ad. Generally, people who are not smoking love that. Right? So they had a huge band of people that wanted this. And all of a sudden, it started catching up like that. Then it was no longer cool to smoke. And do you know, 70% of these young people stopped smoking? Because at that adolescent age, the most important thing to you for a guy, you guys don't know this, but for a guy, is a girlfriend. At 16, 17, 18, isn't it? And if you, I used to spend hours on end, you know? There was a girl that I used to live in the Bumblefield flat, and I was nuts about this girl, right? And then I used to spend, man, getting up in the morning and I used to take the iron and then, you ever heard about that? Putting the crease, you know, even the crease and gel on the hair, I used to have on the hair, and like, no. And then I used to walk, you know, and this girl used to be there in the balcony, and I'm sure she looked at me and all that. This went on for 4 years, 4 years. And then later on I found, she never had even noticed that the crease or nothing. Yeah. I met her at a party and I said, hey, so how are you doing? Did you notice my shirt, you know, the crease and all that, and I used to put gel and all that for you? You did? Yeah. So at that age, the most impressionable thing for these guys are the girlfriend programs. And so this ad had a massive impact. They didn't want to even think of a possibility that she may not like a smoker. Boy, no way. I'd rather give up smoking than, I'm crazy about this girl. This is what happened. See? Psychological, right? Okay. So, this will reduce tobacco use. Prevail and command adolescents contribute to fewer tobacco use. Okay, now you see this part coming in here. Fewer tobacco uses that we added, right? One unintended effect described in the depression, at least initially, was the concern that smokers might respond to workplace smoking restrictions by compensating at home. There's a possibility if you restrict people from smoking at workplace, they might smoke more at home. That can happen. Smoking more, thus increasing the ETS exposure in the house. We look for evidence in this potential harm in our review. We also examine the evidence not shown here that smoking bans in restaurants and hotels adversely affects business revenue and tourism. Did it really affect it? Right? And now we put liberal consumption, which is what we talked about in the hotels and so on, and then here the increased home exposure, right? We need a series of electronic database searches and screen titles abstract and ended up with the following body of evidence. 56 studies were reviewed, 17 studies measured differences in changes in exposure, and of which 10 met our criteria for good of air quality. 51 studies measured smoking habits of employees exposed to the bans or restrictions, of which only 9 met our criteria for good of air. In most cases, that excluded studies did not include concurrent comparison groups. Then you have to go along with the others that were done and the measurements that were created, which you can read later. And then what we do is you end up with all this. And then we take those numbers and apply them over here. Now that is a conceptual model. You see how the pieces come piece by piece by piece. You start talking about different things. That's what you do to your research, right? Okay. Any questions? I have another example in here, but take a break and take a look at that. This is an interesting topic, by the way. Determinants of domestic violence, which is a big issue in the United States. A lot of laws were passed in protecting women, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, it's come to a point now where if any guy even physically even thinks of assaulting somebody, the guy can get sued, he can get arrested, the cops will come and go to court and get a court order coming to your house and pick you by your neck and put you in the car and take you and lock you up. That's the way it is now. So domestic violence has dropped tremendously. You know, there's a big effect there, which is a good thing. So this is a study about that. And the reason for that, so these examples are, these are a lot more complex than what you would be doing, because you are doing a project between your company and what you know of, and you're aware of all the parts that fit together, and it's easier for you to put it together, and these are a lot more than bigger issues, right? Political issues, social issues, right? Cultural issues, isn't it? Take a look at India when you talk about domestic violence. I mean, these guys had so-called honor killings, they actually go kill women because the mother-in-law, is picked off. Because they didn't belong to the right, whatever the sex or, caste, for the caste and also the religion, right? Recently, there was a Hindu woman who was murdered by the mother-in-law because she married the son who was a Muslim. And they didn't want the son to marry a Hindu, so they cut the Muslim off. Go figure. And the guy didn't even get arrested in that state. So, really lousy stuff, isn't it? Okay. All right. There's a bunch of other stuff in here, basically, about domestic violence. They typically just shows you step by step. You take a look at these areas. Psychographic here basically means measures of attitude, values, lifestyles, and opinions is what psychographic means. So when you talk about psychographic characteristics, family characteristics, interpersonal context, that in turn goes into knowledge. Here, what the program exposures apply to domestic violence, what the attitudes are of the people, and then what ends up as practice, and the same thing. Over that we keep adding on and adding on, right? So you can look at that part and see it basically explains to you in detail about all these things. Then if you have some time, go into, if you want to do some searches of a little more about the conceptual modeling, part of these abstracts that I took from these two books, these are the authors. There's a fair amount of conceptual modeling and so on. And I have some printouts that I will also give you, some extra reading. But if you go through this slide, it should basically give you a step-by-step, very simple way of doing modeling. Try to stick to that because it's the same thing I told you about the integrated case study. You were starting off, in my opinion, you were complexing this way too much, and then all kinds of things are going to brain and you were trying to figure this and that, and then you go off the wrong track. You know, anything you do, you simplify it. There are students, by the way, another thing in my opinion, I think what happened here probably to you guys is just a guess, is that you are getting too hung up on the 2 hours. And typically what I told the guys in the city before they started, I said, spend 20 minutes to half hour. Read through the, if you haven't read through it, just review it 2-3 times. If you have read it, at least review it one more, read it one more time. Make your notes in a small little notebook. Simplify what you're supposed to do. Take a look at the specific question. Don't get sidetracked to unnecessary things. And then apply 1.5 hours into your logic. And it's going to go a lot smoother. Because it's an amazing thing what a human brain does. Okay, stress is the biggest cause for inefficiency. If you start putting one moment into your brain about, oh God, it's only 2 hours, I gotta finish this stupid thing, you're in trouble. Because in subconscious mind is working counter to what you want to do. But if you look at this thing and say, hey, this is a breeze, think of the day I'm ready. And you start with that attitude, it makes it a lot easier, right? Just remember that. So same thing here, conceptual modeling. Don't go to complicate this thing too much. These are just basic ways of making these little steps one by one by one. And when you talk to your friends, you're talking about all your colleagues, you want to do this, this, this in your research study, and then somebody might say, hey, what about this? This affects that. Take it and write it down and keep it. Right? Somebody else says something else, talk to your boss about it. Maybe come up with some, you know, see what they have to say, in your case, your partners. Right? They might have ideas, you never know. And talk to other people as well, in your field or whoever, you know, your buddies or whatever, and then think. You never know what somebody might say. They might just ask you a question, write it down, look at it, say, does this really affect me? And if it's saying, yeah, maybe. Put it down in a box and now you start working on it. Right? And before you know it, you have that structure done, then you take a look at your hypothesis. See how step by step how easy it is. Right? Okay, any questions? You got up late, you're still yawning. I answer any question. That means we know now you slept late. That is true. Okay, then let's take a break and I found 3 people, we can still make it on that. 10:20.